So every great story deserves a great ending. And we've been talking about Ruth now for 3 weeks. This is our fourth week of four in the series called The Best Is Yet to Come on the story of Ruth. And the ending of every story is what we remember from that story. So if there's a great movie with a so-so ending, we think of the movie as so-so, right? But if there's a surprise ending on like a great ending at the end of a so-so movie, like say Sixth Sense, for instance, anybody? Anybody on Sixth Sense? Right? Okay movie, but great ending. We remember the ending. So help me out here. Just like shout out like favorite movie ending of all time. Anybody? What, Gone with the Wind? Okay, I've not seen that one, but I did see it on a list of great movie endings this week, so I'll take your word for it. Anybody else? It's a Wonderful Life. That one I'm familiar with, yep. Every time a bell rings, right? An angel gets its wings. Anybody else? What's that? Oh, yeah, whatever I say, yeah. anybody else? Great movie ending? What's that? Huh? So, I didn't hear you. One more time.
Neon Demon.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ending on Neon Demon was so great. What's he talking about? I was going to go with something like Shawshank Redemption, right? Right, when he's climbing through the pipe and he raises hands in the rain and like he's free. It's not just his freedom, but like Morgan Freeman has a chance now too. Like that's, it's right up there with Neon Demon. I don't know what that. Citizen Kane. I read recently that was like the most famous ending of all time. The whole thing is about a sled, which doesn't sound like a great ending, but I've not seen it, so who can I judge, right? More recently, The Avengers. I got like a sort of like, anybody seen Avengers yet, by the way? Anybody? I'm not going to say the ending for all of you who have not seen it yet, but there is a very memorable ending that I'm not going to go into, but I have lots of thoughts on. I have lots of thoughts on. Find me after. It's not the ending. That's true. That's true. It's not the ending. Well, we're going to get to the ending of our story of Ruth today, and I believe that it'll have one of those memorable endings. An ending that will leave us feeling like there is resolve and there is meaning and there is purpose behind what's been happening so far. Before we can go there, though, let's review. Let's sort of like start where we at the beginning and review so we can get to this place where we can end the story. 3 weeks ago, a man named Elimelech took his family from Bethlehem to Moab, and then three words changed the story forever. Those three words were, "And Elimelech died." And what happened in that moment is oftentimes what happens in our real lives, is there was no purpose given, there was no why behind it. It was just this moment that was like a gut punch moment, and you were left being like, why? What now? What next? Why would you allow that to happen, God? But what happened then, which is what happens oftentimes in our life, is why isn't the best question, but what next? And what next is Naomi went back to Bethlehem with Ruth, and along the way, we got a little window as to why God would have allowed it. Because Ruth, on the way to Bethlehem with Naomi, says, "Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people be my people and your God my God." And so Ruth returns or gives herself over to the God of the Bible. And then at that moment in Bethlehem, when they enter, it says they entered at the time of barley harvest, which if you were for the second week was going to be very, very important. And the three words were going to turn the story again. Instead of the first week and Elimelech died, it was as it happened. And as it happened, Ruth entered into the field of Boaz, and Boaz showed her, Boaz modeled chesed, which we talked about is not kindness and generosity and self-sacrifice and grace and forgiveness, but it's the substance of your soul that causes you to be those things. And that Boaz had experienced the chesed of God, and therefore he was a person whose life was marked by chesed. Then last week, if you were here, Naomi pushed the little duckling out of the nest, said, "Ruth, go and have the DTR, have the define the relationship conversation with Boaz." And there was some conflict on whether or not the advice she gave was good advice or not. I got only a handful of emails being like, "Jake, I disagreed with you," which I feel like is probably a little bit of a win, you know? Like, I didn't offend too many people with my sort of like suggested seduction from last week. But that led us to today. You see, what happened last week is that Ruth proposed to Boaz. Ruth, with nothing in her hands, says, Boaz, I have nothing to offer you, but I want to spend the rest of my life with you. And this is how we approach God. We have nothing to give back. We have nothing to hand him in return. But he says, I will accept you as you are with nothing. And that's exactly how I want to begin the life with you. And so that leads us to where we are today. That was 3 weeks of time in a couple minutes. All right, so what we have is last week, Ruth proposes to Boaz. And Boaz says, yes, I will totally marry you. But we have a problem. You see, in their culture, when someone dies, when a male died and there was no kids or heirs left behind, the next closest male relative was called the Redeemer. And this Redeemer, which is like, so Elimelech dies. You can tell because he has X's for eyes and his tongue is hanging out. In case you're wondering, yes, I did draw this, and you should be impressed. So, man of many talents. I don't know if you knew that or not. One of them being art. So Elimelech died. He had normally what would happen is his sons would have carried on his name, but both his sons, Mahlon and Chilion, died. And so the responsibility of his next closest male heir would be to redeem his family, to buy back land, to take care of any of his children or female family members, to redeem or buy back or to take care of would have been the job of the next closest male relative. They are called the family redeemer. Now, Boaz wants to be that, but Boaz is in Redeemer Chair 2. Okay, so there's someone closer. Why are you guys still laughing? These are impressive drawings. No more laughter. I slaved over these pictures. No, I'm just kidding. No more laughter at my pictures. No, I'm kidding. All right. So you have Boaz, and he wants to be the Redeemer. He wants to marry Ruth, but there is someone in between him. So he is in Redeemer Chair 2, and he wants to talk to Redeemer Chair 1 and get into Redeemer Chair 1, which is where we'll pick up in Ruth chapter 4, verse 1. So Boaz went to town gate and took a seat there. Just then the family Redeemer he had mentioned came by. So Boaz called out to him, "Come over here and sit down, friend. I want to talk to you." So they sat down together. Keep reading. Then Boaz called 10 leaders from the town and asked them to sit as witnesses. This is how they would have handled business in their culture at that time. Is there was one town gate, and everyone entered and exited from town through. And so if you were going to conduct business, if you're going to make trades, business agreements, or whatever, it oftentimes took place at the town gate, and you would call other respected people over, and they would be part of the business solution. And so Boaz wants to get into Redeemer Chair 1 and jump over the person who is currently there, the closest male relative of Elimelech. So this is what he's going to try and do. In verse 3 it says, "And Boaz said to the family Redeemer, 'You know Naomi, who came back from Moab. She is selling the land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should speak to you about it so that you can redeem it if you wish. If you want to buy the land, then buy it here in the presence of these witnesses. But if you don't want it, let me know right away, because I am next in line to redeem it after you.' The man replied, 'All right, I'll redeem it.'" So as we just said, Boaz is here. He wants to marry Ruth. It's this beautiful, romantic love story. And so Boaz wants to get into this seat. And so he says, "Hey, I want to talk to you about a very important topic. What I want to talk to you about is Ruth." Wrong. He brings up land. I don't know. At this point, you're like, why are you talking about the land, Boaz? Like, we're not talking about the land. And actually, this is the first time that Naomi's land has been mentioned at any point in the story. So I don't know if she's actually selling the land or he's just sort of like being shrewd and like taking freedoms here. We don't know if it's like new news or like fake news. But what we do know is that he sort of positions this whole thing in terms of the land. And so the Redeemer is like, yes, I will gladly redeem, buy back from Elimelech all that he has left behind, namely his land. Yes, I will do that. I'm game and I'm bored. Let's do this. I will buy this back. I will. And really what happens is Naomi, she has not a lot of like business. She doesn't get a voice in this, for one. And secondly, she doesn't have a lot of power in her negotiation. Everyone knows she's probably desperate for the money that this land would bring. And when you're desperate in the negotiations, you are negotiating from a place of weakness. And so chances are, a redeemer, seat one, thought that he was going to get a good price on this land. He was going to redeem this land back to himself. He was going to buy it and give her money. But really, it would not have probably worked out well for Naomi. Then Boaz told him, "Of course, your purchase of the land from Naomi also requires that you marry Ruth, the Moabite widow. That way she can have children who will carry on her husband's name and keep the land in the family." "Then I can't redeem it," the family redeemer replied, "because this might endanger my own estate. You redeem the land, I cannot do it." So he says, it's really quite brilliant. He says, "All right, redeemer, Elimelech died, he left the land, and it needs to be purchased. So do you want to redeem the land? Because if you don't, I will. But if you do, you can." And he's like, "Yep, I will totally redeem the land. I will buy the land back from Naomi. He says, "Great. With the land, you get Ruth." Ruth is a Moabite barren widow. And by the way, you also get Naomi, the angry mother-in-law. So you totally should go ahead and redeem the land. But with it, there are strings attached. The strings, namely, a Moabite barren widow and an angry mother-in-law. Would you still like to redeem the land? And he's like, "Oh, did you say land? I thought you said lamb, because I can't redeem a land right now. If you had said lamb, totally. Land, hard no. Like, hard no on the land. Lamb, yes. So in review, lamb, yes. Land, no. Thank you. I'll talk to you later. I'm out. Bye." No on the land with the Moabite and the angry mother-in-law. No. So bye. Thank you. Bye. Right? He's like, "No, I do not. I cannot redeem that. That's not in the cards for me. No. No, thank you." And what I sort of like skipped over is that, let's say the redeemer had redeemed the land and Ruth, and he had married Ruth, and they had a male heir. That male heir would have been in Elimelech's lineage, and then the land would have returned to that male heir. And so the redeemer in the first seat viewed the land as the prize and Ruth as a problem. But Boaz viewed Ruth as the prize. And what's fascinating about this is the redeemer, his choice makes sense. Like, in the long run, it probably wouldn't have been financially advantageous, because we had to buy the land and it would have returned. And if they had an heir, it would have returned to that heir. And so he would have spent all this money on this land and not been able to keep it. And so the choice makes sense. Like, he made this choice that was logical to ensure that his name and his estate and his holdings were sure, that they would withstand time. And the funny thing is, the book of Ruth goes out of its way to never say this guy's name. We don't know what his name is. He's just known as Redeemer. And so the exact step that he took to make sure his name was not forgotten is the exact step that saw to it his name was forgotten throughout time. And the thing is, like, this guy, this Redeemer, like, his choice, it makes sense. Like, it logically, financially, fiscally, financial planning wise, like, it makes sense to not do this. You know, to buy the, redeem the land and to get the Moabite widow and the angry mother-in-law. But even like the long-term ramifications of this beyond the relational stuff, like, it makes sense. Like, it made all the sense in the world for him to not redeem the land at that time. But for Boaz, it wasn't about logic. It wasn't about sense. It wasn't about, you know, what was going to make him rich more long-term. It was about Ruth. And it's about what he felt like God was calling him to. And this guy, the Redeemer, the nameless Redeemer, like, he had a hard choice. He had an illogical choice that he couldn't make. And I believe that there'll be times in your life, in my life, when God is calling us to something that won't make sense, that will be illogical, that the road that we feel like we're being called to is the harder road. It's the road that is less traveled. It's the road that we would only possibly make and choose if we felt like God was in it. But that will be the exact road that leads us to the place that God wants us. And what's funny is that he kind of, to me, seems like Orpah in the first week. When Ruth went with Naomi and Orpah went back to her people, like Orpah's choice and his choice, it makes sense. Like, it makes logical sense for them to make the choice that they made. It was a good choice, but it wasn't God's choice. Like, they did the logical thing and not what Boaz and Ruth did, which is what they followed what God was calling them to. We'll keep reading. So in verse 9, it says this. Then Boaz said to the elders and to the crowd standing around, "You are witnesses that today I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. And with the land I have acquired, Ruth, the Moabite widow of Mahlon, to be my wife." And so then what he gets in this moment is what he wanted all along, which is to marry Ruth. And what I haven't said so far, which I've intentionally left out until this moment, is what the name Boaz means. So the name Boaz means strong. And you see that in his story, right? Like, he is this man who is strong of character. And when he arrives back to his farm, like, he greets his employees, "Oh, God bless you." And they sing out in chorus back to him, "Oh, God bless you, Boaz," right? He's this strong guy. But this moment, this sort of like shrewd maneuvering to get around Redeemer One, like to take these steps, like this is Boaz at his strongest. And what's fascinating about this story and other stories in the Bible is when strong men interact with strong women, the strong men end up stronger, not weaker. Like Boaz here, he interacts with Ruth, and Ruth proposes to him. And there are probably men in here who'd be like, "What? You can't propose to me. That's my man card." Like, but it makes Boaz stronger. King Xerxes interacts with Esther, and it makes him stronger. John gets stronger after Jesus calls him to take on the care of his mother. David gets stronger after Abigail comes to his defense before he is king. Jacob's love for Rachel causes him to withstand Rachel's father's deception. And Boaz gets stronger after he interacts with Ruth. This is my story. You see, I'm originally from the Midwest, and I worked for a church in Indiana, and then I worked for a church in Ohio, Cincinnati, and then I came out here to New England. And when I started a church here in New England, as a youth pastor, this would have been 9 years ago, the person I reported to was a woman. Her name was Nancy. And even the person she reported to was a woman. Her name was Sharon. And in the Midwest, women in ministry, they do like receptionist and children's ministry and women's ministry. And that's kind of like the list. That's like the whole list. And I'd never seen women lead with such strength and with such grace. And when I would be not, I mean, my choice would be crazy, like those women would call me on my nonsense. And they made me a stronger leader. And then as I was leading this youth ministry, I had a partner in the ministry named Martha. And Martha was this older woman. And she would constantly call me on my stuff, right? Gently, but with consistency and with strength, call me on my stuff, making me a better leader. And after I left that ministry and we began to start a church, I had this partner, this woman named Paula. And Paula walked along the planning of this church with me. And I felt like every conversation I ever had with Paula, she said the same thing. I'd be like, I tell her what's going on, and I would like say what I'm thinking, and she'd be like, "Great, well, what does Jesus want from you?" And then something else would come up. I'm like, "Oh, but this is happening, so I'm going to say this, and I'm going to tell that person off." And she'd be like, "Yes, but what does Jesus want you to say to that person? What would Jesus say to that person?" Every conversation ended with, "Yes, but Jesus." And I'd be like, "Bah, Paula, you're right." And what's funny is my wife and I, we were at a church once, and in the service, they were doing this like personality strength test. And everyone was either like a lion, a beaver, an otter, or like a golden retriever or something. And my wife and I were the only lion couple in the church, where both of us were like lions. And people are like, "How does that go for you?" And I'm like, "Usually pretty awesome, but we know where each other stands at all times." And actually, this Thursday will be 1 year that I've been part of the Harbor family. And yeah, that's pretty awesome. And the last year, you know, interacting with Kelly and the strength that she brings and the way that I've partnered with her in ministry here. And I can only say, what I'm trying to say is that when you interact with, in meaningful ways, people who are not like you, it only makes you stronger. People of other genders, people of other backgrounds, cultures, ethnicities. When you interact with someone in meaningful ways who are not exactly like you, don't look like you, don't act like you, don't do life like you, it almost always makes you stronger. This is what happened to Boaz. He interacted with Ruth. He got proposed to by a woman, and it made him a stronger man. Let's keep reading. We're going to go to verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth into his home, and she became his wife. Like, he maneuvered around Redeemer 1. He got to the place where he's in seat 1. The land, that's fine. He'll do that. He'll, like, buy the land. But really, like, he wanted to be with Ruth, and he took Ruth, and she became his wife. Because I promised you a love story. I promised you a whole and holy love story. When he slept with her, the Lord enabled her to become pregnant. I don't know why it got so specific there, but it did. And she gave birth to a son. Then the women of the town said to Naomi, "Praise the Lord who has now provided a redeemer for your family. May this child be famous in Israel. May he restore your youth and care for you in your old age. For he is the son of your daughter-in-law, who loves you and has been better to you than 7 sons." So now you have Naomi, who probably a year and a half ago, for us it was 3 weeks ago, lost everything. Lost her husband, her sons, one of her daughters-in-law, had no hope, had no chance, was probably going to die penniless and of starvation. She was so angry and bitter, she said she changed her name to Bitter. At this point, she says, "God has turned his back on me. He has raised his fist at me. Why would he do this?" Like, she knows beyond a shadow of a doubt that the rest of her life is going to be marked by pain and loss. And that is it. That's the sum total of her life from then on. And she is sure of it. And then probably a year and a half later, she's not only holding this squishy, beautiful bundle of joy, this grandson, but the only thing better than that is she's holding the squishy, beautiful bundle of joy surrounded by her other grandma friends, so they all get to adore like this little one like she does. And what's so beautiful about it is what they say. They say, you see what God has done for you? He has given you this redeemer, this Boaz, who is this strong figure in the community, and he loves you, and he's going to take care of you. And from Boaz, you get this grandson, and may he take care of you in your old age. And even in addition to this, you have Ruth, and it says that she is your daughter-in-law, but it's beautiful because it says she's not only your daughter-in-law, but you have a daughter-in-law who loves you. And so Naomi, who just a short time ago was sure her life was going to be marked by nothing but pain, nothing but loss, has everything. But we're not done yet. Naomi took the baby and cuddled him to her breast, and she cared for him as if he were her own. The neighbor women said, "Now at last Naomi has a son again." And they named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse and the grandfather of David. Now, if you don't think about David, you know that David becomes king. He becomes king of Israel. He is the king that leads Israel into their golden era. And so this Naomi, who had nothing, who was sure her life was going to be marked but nothing but pain and by loss for the rest of her life, became the great grandmother to a king. But the only thing about David, you know that David was in the lineage of Jesus. And so Naomi was the great 31 times removed grandmother to Jesus, which means that moment when all was lost, when her life was going to be marked by nothing but pain, when her life was going to be marked by nothing but confusion and hurt, that in that moment, that Naomi became the great-grandmother of David and the great 31 times removed grandmother to Jesus. And your pain and your past is oftentimes the platform that God will use to accomplish his purposes in your life. There is no way Naomi could have ever known what was going to come in her future. She had no shot at this, but God. See, God used her pain and her past to be the platform through which he was going to bless all of humanity. And there's no way Naomi could have ever known that was coming. I mean, she was sure God had turned his back on her. She was sure that God had raised his fist to her. But she's going to be the great grandmother to David and the great 31 times removed grandmother to Jesus, because your pain and your past is the platform God will use to accomplish his purposes in your life. The thing is, chances are someone has rejected you, has abandoned you, has walked out on you, who has left you in their dust, and it probably left you feeling like you were knocked down, and you probably were knocked down for a season. But in God's economics, you're not knocked down, you're knocked down, but you're not knocked out. And he will use your past, and he will use your pain for his purposes in your life. We sang a song before I came out about God's faithfulness. God's faithfulness is stronger than your past, and his faithfulness is stronger than your mistakes. If someone has hurt you, if someone has abandoned you, abused you, God can use that as your platform. But if you have hurt you, if you've made choices, if you have done things that have been destructive in your own life, God can use that too, because his faith is stronger than your past and your mistakes, and his faith and his faithfulness is stronger than the pain that you've experienced caused by someone else too. You know, 1 Corinthians 13 says this: when I was a child, I spoke and thought and reasoned as a child, but when I grew up, I put away childish things. Now we see things imperfectly, like puzzling reflections in a mirror. But then we will see everything with perfect clarity, and that I know now is partial and incomplete. But then I will see and know everything completely, just as God now knows me completely. It's this verse that's a promise from God that as we go through life, we're not going to understand everything that happens to us all the time. But he says there will come a time when you do understand. The first week, I quoted Soren Kierkegaard when he says, we live life forward, but we understand life backwards. So I don't know what your past is. I don't know what your pain is, but God can use that as your platform for his purposes in your life. You guys know why we sell coffee, by the way, in the cafe? Anybody know this? We sell coffee in the cafe to support a ministry called Land of a Thousand Hills. And Land of a Thousand Hills is this ministry that was grown, quite literally, out of a genocide that happened in Uganda. Hey, watch this video, and we'll talk about it more afterwards.
Seventeen years ago, this world, and Rwanda in particular, experienced one of the worst tragedies ever. Over 1 million people were killed in 100 days. And for the most part, the world sat and watched it. After the Holocaust, we said never again. And guess what? In 1994, we sat and watched another Holocaust take place.
Cya genocide baraje interahamwe zaraje aribo barabatwiciye ziyobowe n'abari abasirikare bo kubwabyara Imana baraje bica imiryango yacu yose irashira hasigaye njyewe gusa
nagiye mu gitero cyishe umugabo we igihe nasaba imbabazi numvaga mufite mvuga ko atazazimpa ariko byamfashe kubona tukimara gushyikirana.
A lot of people afterwards wondered what they could do, wondered how they could make a difference. The world started looking towards Rwanda. And what we found was this little tiny country, about the size of the state of Maryland, started to rise from the ashes. Today, folks are reconciling, continue to be reconciled as they work together in the coffee gardens.
Noneho ikindi cya kabiri Imana yankoreye ni ukumpa umutima wo kubabarira. Mbonye ukuntu baje bababaye baje kunsaba imbabazi narazibahaye. Abo banyamuryango tubana harimo abatwiciye. Harimo abatwiciye, harimo n'abo biciye. Twese tubana hamwe n'iryo shyirahamwe ryitwa ubumwe.
Ariko afatanyije n'abandi, ariko nabo nta kibazo. Urabona nkatwe nkanjye ndi umupfakazi, ariko iyo duhuriye hamwe tugakora igikorwa cy'iterambere, tugiraho tuganisha buriya ngewe ko mbona koperative yaduteje imbere cyane duhera ku ubwo bumwe n'ubwiyunge.
Kumbabarira ni uko dusangira, nta kintu agomba kumbuza, nta kintu agomba gukora ntagikoze.
They've learned to forgive each other, even though one murdered the other's family. And when I asked them how the reconciliation process was going,
They said they still have problems, but they work it out in the garden.
So in 1994, in a short amount of time, in a space similar to the size of Maryland, over a million people died. And since then, people are working side by side with the man who murdered their husband or the man who murdered their family. You're like, how is that possible? And how could this ever happen in the real world? It's because that pain in that past has become the platform for God's purposes in their life. You know, we have a ministry called Celebrate Recovery. And the people who lead Celebrate Recovery are people who lead this ministry from places of pain in their past. You know, Stephen's over here, and he's one of the leaders of Celebrate Recovery. And the leaders, Stephen and Jeff, they lead from this place of their past hurts, their past mistakes, and their past pain. And this pain and this past helps them walk people through their own hurts, hang-ups, and habits, right? That's good? All right, I got the three H's right. And so their past becomes the platform for God's purposes in their life. We have a family that comes to Harbor who, in their past, made the painful choice of having an abortion. And since then, God has used that. He has changed them. And they have started a ministry for women in emergency pregnancy situations. And they come alongside, and they resource, and they love, and they give a home to. And these women who are in these emergency pregnancy situations, and it's because their past has become the platform God has used to accomplish his purposes in their life. God's faithfulness is stronger than your past. God's faithfulness is stronger than your pain. And there is nothing you could have done that will make God not be able to use you in the future. And there's nothing anyone could ever have done to you that would make God not be able to use you in your future. So if you've been rejected and abandoned and walked out on, if you've rejected and abandoned and walked out on somebody else, if you have a past that you think no one could get past, you know what? God already has. In your past, in your pain, will be the platform God will use to accomplish his purposes in your life. His faithfulness is stronger than your past. And his faithfulness is stronger than your pain. He wants to use you. So let me end where we started. The story of Ruth is a crazy and involved, fast-moving, nuanced, Cinderella-type romance rolled into a Romeo and Juliet love story. It at moments feels dark and tragic, at moments feels like a comedy, but throughout the entire thing, there is hope. It is this promise that God can do amazing things in the lives of amazingly flawed people. And it's this promise from God that the best is yet to come. Let me pray. God, I am so thankful that you are the God who is reckless with your love, who would love and come alongside and use even people like me, God. God, I look back at my own life and the mistakes that I've made and the pain that I've caused myself, the pain that I've caused others, and the pain in my past, and I was like, man, God, there's no way you could use me, but God, that is exactly the type of person that you use. God, as I look out of this room, there are probably people in here who have walked out on others, who have been walked out on by themselves, who have experienced the pain of being walked out on, who have been rejected and abandoned, who would feel like there's no way that God could use them. Maybe it's a past of addiction or destruction. Well, whatever it is, God can meet us right where we are in spite of our past, because of our past, and use us to accomplish your purposes in our lives. And so, God, you are this loving, forgiving God. You love us exactly where we are, not in spite of our flaws, but because of them. And I thank you for that. There is no amount of painful past that will ever make us unusable by you. I am living proof of that. And so, God, I am thankful
for this good story, for this romantic story. But it's not just a good story, it's a gospel story. It's this beautiful story of Ruth. God, it is your promise to us that we are all claiming that the best is yet to come. And so we stand before you, God, with our arms open, our past and our pain exposed, and we say, God, use this as the platform to accomplish your purposes in my life. We love you, and we are so thankful. In your name, amen.